This is episode number 50 with the founder and CEO of Lime Painting, Nick Lopez.
Welcome to the Path to Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Wes Barefoot, where it's my mission to help aspiring entrepreneurs and existing business owners take control of their lives and create freedom for themselves through business ownership. Each episode, I'll be exploring the strategies and tactics of other successful entrepreneurs that have created freedom in their own lives while sharing what I'm learning along my own path to freedom. I'm glad you're here. Let's drop in. Before we drop into the episode, a quick message from our sponsor, 919 Marketing. I've worked with 919 Marketing for years, and there's no one I trust more with my marketing needs in any of our businesses. I've worked with them in our franchise businesses, in my consulting business. I've worked with them on the franchisor side, and I love working with 919 because they take the time to listen. They take the time to understand what it is I'm looking to accomplish through my marketing, who I'm trying to reach, and then they help me put a plan together to do just that. I've worked with tons of marketing companies over the years, and too often it's a one-size-fits-all approach, but not with 919 Marketing. In addition to that, they've developed some amazing technology called 919 Insights, franchising's first and only AI-powered analytics platform. With 919 Insights in place, 919 Marketing can identify the exact topics that matter to your franchise candidates and provide the specific roadmap to help your brand become the highest ranking and most trusted resource when they're searching for answers. So if you're ready to start getting better results from your marketing, and if you want a free demo of 919 Insights, reach out to Graham Chapman at 919-459-8157 or send them an email at gchapman@919marketing.com to schedule your free demo today. So whether you're a franchisor, a franchisee, or just getting started in your first franchise business, make sure to check out 919 Marketing.
Buckle up, P2F listeners, because you're about to get limed. That's right. My guest today is Nick Lopez. Nick is the founder and CEO of Lime Painting, as well as Lime Painting Franchise. Lime Painting is a value-based, high-end custom painting and contracting service provider, but Lime is far from an ordinary painting company or painting franchise for that matter. They are the only painting franchise that focuses solely on high-end homes and businesses that are valued in the top 30% of the market. And they go well beyond just painting their clients' homes. They provide a variety of different coatings so they can work on any type of exterior. And they also take a deep dive into their clients' properties to understand where their clients have room for improvement in other areas of their property, ultimately helping their clients reinvest in, for most people, what is one of their highest valued assets. It's a very unique twist on an age-old business, and I've really enjoyed getting to know Nick, learning more about the opportunity that he's created here with Lime Painting. And I think you'll hear in listening to Nick that he's really thinking through everything that he needs to put in place to build a world-class franchise organization with Lime Painting. This is a newer franchise concept compared to many franchises out there, but they are well on their way to becoming a national brand. And Nick, from what I can tell, is doing a fantastic job, and he surrounded himself with a lot of great people. So enjoy this episode. Nick's got a great entrepreneurial story, and I'm very excited to see what he's able to do as he continues to build the Lime Painting franchise. Let's go ahead and drop in with Nick Lopez.
For those listening that aren't familiar with you and your company, give us a little bit of an introduction and tell us about your business and kind of where you are in that business today.
Well, Lime is a high-end painting, coatings, and surface restoration company. I never really thought I would own a paint company in my career.
Yeah. It's not what you grew up wanting to be.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, I never thought it would be high-end painting. You know, what does that even mean? You know, 13 years ago, you know, I was 18, freshman at Michigan State, and was really just a broke college kid. $500 credit card just to get to East Lansing from Denver, and walked onto the wrestling team. Had a great time, made the team, and made some really good relationships, but ultimately a scholarship was a couple years out. So I started a paint company. My dad was a contractor. I always felt comfortable on a job site.
Okay.
And I heard of some friends that were running paint companies. So I started a company called Spartan College Painters.
Okay.
And it just so happened that East Lansing has a lot of quote unquote high-end homes. And I was serving these clients. I fell in love with the business, the transformation that goes into the whole process. And I constantly kept hearing, thanks for showing up. Thanks for doing a good job. Thanks for answering your phone. And at the time, I was just doing for people what I would want done for myself.
Absolutely.
You know, being green to business, I didn't necessarily realize that just because you pay for something doesn't mean that you're going to get it.
Right, or get it when you would expect to get it, or, yeah, anything that, yeah, totally agree.
When you talk construction, it's like, you know, you can't write some of the horror stories that I was told in college. But as a young man, you know, starting my career, you know, logically, I thought, hey, why not work for the biggest houses? I felt like it'd be the biggest challenge, but the most rewarding. And I felt like everybody would want to serve those clients. But the more I did it, the more I realized they really struggled to find resources that understood their property and knew it well. And they were willing to pay for quality and having the job done right.
Sure.
You know, they were willing to pay more to get more, if you will.
Yep.
And so as I got into my business degree, I started learning about competitive advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And it just started clicking for me that what I was doing for this niche was drastically different than a lot of the resources that they had in the market. So I started looking into national paint companies that were doing it, and there weren't any. And that was inspiring. It was exciting. And I talked to a mentor of mine at the time, and he recommended me to a book, E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. And I just fell in love with this book, and it talks about franchising and scaling through. Yeah, you got a whole handful of them there.
It comes up on, I would say, one out of every three podcast interviews I do. And so my loyal listeners are sick and tired of hearing me talk about the E-Myth, but I send a copy to everyone I work with that goes on to buy a franchise and put a handwritten note in it. But, you know, you said it was instrumental for you. It's been instrumental for me. I think it should be required reading for anyone that owns a business.
Absolutely. You know, here I was, knew nothing about franchising, and this book, even if it's not franchising related, just does such a great job of getting you to think about working on your business, not in your business.
Yep.
And doing that through process and systems and roles and duplication and, you know, ultimately scaling through franchising.
Mm-hmm.
That was 10 years ago. So 10 years ago, I knew that, you know, I was going to take this need that I was experiencing in East Lansing to other markets across the country. And thankfully at the time I was in the middle of my college degree. I didn't have to rush, and I could be intentional about, you know, really foolproofing the model and understanding franchising before, you know, I ultimately started expanding.
Well, that's so cool. And we were talking offline before we started recording, you were telling me about some new franchise partners you're bringing on in different markets, which it's a very exciting time. And I know you guys are, you know, really growing right now. And I asked you, I said, did you ever think you'd be here? And you very definitively just said, yeah, I did, which I think is cool because, you know, it shows that you had a vision and you've been very intentional about executing that. But, you know, I love what you said about you know, not feeling like you had to rush once you kind of said, hey, I can scale this thing and I can probably do it through franchising. But because a lot of people, once they come to that realization, they just rush out and they start trying to sell some franchises and they haven't really put a whole lot of thought into, all right, well, what are we going to do after we actually sell a few franchises? How are we going to train these people? How are we going to support them? You know, do we have the things in place that we really need to be a franchisor? So it sounds like you had the opportunity to really dig in, learn, study franchising, and put a lot of thought into what does this actually look like as we begin to franchise, and then what does it look like once we really get some scale?
Absolutely. And also partner with the right people along the way and have the right consultants and advisors contribute towards that understanding of franchising. And that's still happening.
When you started this business in college, I mean, it sounds like this was really just a way for you to kind of put yourself through college.
Started that way.
Yep. Started that way. At what point did you kind of realize, hey, this is what I want to do. I want to grow this thing into a national high-end painting company.
It really started just clicking in those classrooms that I was sitting in, those lecture halls, learning about different aspects of business. And, you know, I think it really started clicking around those conversations of, as simple as it is, competitive advantage. And, you know, we've really benefited from the different ways that we do painting, coatings, and surface restoration. And it at the core goes back to showing up, doing a good job. Yep. And answering your phone.
As simple as it sounds, I mean, that's, and you know, I've talked about this on the podcast too. I mean, the franchises we own are home service, you know, related. And I love the space because the bar is set pretty low. I mean, like you said, you can't write some of the horror stories that homeowners have had with, you know, different contractors that they've brought in to handle different projects around their house. And so if you do answer the phone, if you do show up on time, if you finish the project on time and you don't raise the price, you're exceeding and usually wowing your clients. And then if you can find ways to go even beyond that, now you've got raving fans that are going to tell their friends, their neighbors, anyone that'll listen about how good of a job you've done. And it all comes down to systems and processes.
Thank you. Yeah. Systems, process, you know, on a small scale. Okay. That's simple. Show up, answer your phone, do a good job. But at scale, if you're really trying to grow a sizable business, you know, a location in particular or multiple locations, that's where that system and process, the technology, the training, the support, those roles, you know, that's where it all comes together. And that takes time to work out all those kinks and prove out how to be consistent with answering the phone, showing up and doing a good job.
No doubt. So again, very respectful, I think, that you know, really took the time to try to work out some of the kinks and poke holes in your model before you started going out and offering franchises. And I think I remember hearing this, correct me if I'm wrong, you actually started operating the business in other markets outside of East Lansing before you ever started franchising. Is that accurate?
In college? Yep. I was hiring kind of district managers, if you will, from different universities across Michigan.
Yeah, so you were really kind of trialing the franchise model without officially franchising it in a way.
Yeah, that principle from E-Myth, you know, roles, process, systems, and scaling by working on the business, not in it. And whether it's franchising or just business, if you can do those things, you know, you're not in the business. You can scale beyond just yourself or a single location.
So are you familiar with College Pro Painters? I'm sure you are at this point.
You know, when I mentioned earlier that my friends were running other college paint companies, there was Works and College Pro and, you know, Student Painters. And there were multiple back then. And so I got a feel for, like, you know, what are best practices around, like, you know, top line, who are the high performers across the country, and that stuff. Even though I wasn't in those companies, I was able to be inspired and kind of stack myself up to those other college paint companies.
Yeah. When you mentioned that you knew people that were doing painting businesses in college, that's what it made me think of, was, well, maybe it was like College Pro Painters or something like that. But yeah. So, I mean, I would say invaluable experience that you got, you know, in those early years. So when did you actually, get to the point of officially franchising Lime Painting?
We actually started the franchise 2019, really finalized the FDD and the way that we were going to launch in 2018. But, you know, our first owners opened up in 2019.
And what's the ride been like since then? I mean, I like I said earlier, you guys are growing. I know that. But, you know, what are some of the lessons that you've learned, you know, over the last, what, I guess, 2 years at this point, you know, franchising the business? What are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned? And, you know, tell us a little bit about what that journey's been like so far.
Initially, it was, you know, like you said, hey, we don't want to jump out of the gun here. And because we're quote unquote franchising, you know, let's just open it up and really start growing. You know, with our legacy owners, our first owners, we wanted to really hone in on, okay, where are the bottlenecks in the business? We felt like operationally those bottlenecks were foolproofed. We wanted to see, okay, well, where are the bottlenecks when it comes to our legacy owners, our initial owners? What we realized was that, you know, painting is a service that's in demand. It's just the reality of it. It's not a profound or new business. It's painting and there's demand. And so when our owners were opening, they were busy and they struggled keeping up with that demand. And in particular, they struggled around sending the amount of proposals that they needed to send in a timely manner. And that's a problem across the industry. You know, now that we've launched, you know, we opened up about 10 locations in January this year. And as our national trainer was going around opening locations, multiple markets, he heard clients in consultations share with him, hey, look, we had, you know, this company, national companies, won't mention the names, come by and we never got a proposal. And we hear that time and time and time again.
But I believe it.
Our owners were struggling with the same problem.
Right. Yeah.
Getting proposals to clients. As a franchise owner, or a salesperson out in the field in our business, your focus is on out shaking hands, meeting people, growing the brand, generating revenue, delivering the client experience. To get back to the office and turn on that switch to do quote unquote admin work, it's tough.
Yeah.
And days go by because, you know, you procrastinate and more appointments come and more clients call wanting another appointment. And the estimate is the easy part, right? It's hard to sit back, build a proposal, and then not only build it, but also do the pricing.
Yeah. I was going to say to make sure it's accurate, right?
Now you're flexing different muscles. Yep. And so we're like, oh my gosh, we really got to do something about this. And so we built a whole division on the corporate side to support owners and their salespeople so that they could submit requests for us to help them that way and, you know, do their pricing and do their proposal. And so we turn it back to them within 24 hours.
You and I talked a couple weeks ago and you were telling me about that. And I mean, my eyes lit up because I was like, that's a game changer. I mean, it's same deal in our businesses, right? I mean, it's usually the salesperson, whoever went out and did the actual estimate or, you know, consultation, that's going to then turn the quote around. Then in one of our businesses, we give it while we're still there in the home. So it's not as big of an issue. But in the other business, you know, usually, especially on a bigger job, there's some pretty complex, you know, numbers that have to be crunched to make sure our estimate's correct and everything. And it's a challenge. So I'm sitting there like imagining, wow, if we had someone in the corporate office doing this for that business, and I may actually send this episode to the CEO of that company and be like, just something to think about. But I mean, it's a game changer. It really is, because now your salespeople don't have to flip that switch of going to, you know, from sales mode to admin mode. They can just keep focusing on revenue generating activities, going out, meeting with more clients, and they can just stay in that lane and stay focused versus having to constantly go back and forth. And then it creates a much better experience for the client because they're not having to wait. They're not having to wonder, you know, where is this? Did they forget about me? What's going on? So, you know, credit to you for realizing that so early on, you know, into the evolution of your company, and then actually, you know, taking action and putting it in place. That's huge.
Yeah. I mean, the proprietary technology that goes into that, you know, exchange between the field people and corporate, and then the templates and the proposal system itself, the pricing, estimating those formulas that are built into that. It was a massive undertaking.
Oh, I bet.
Especially like for us, we offer 40 different services. So standardizing all that. But one of the things I've noticed that benefited, sales folks and new franchise owners to the business is they don't have to think about, okay, what's the best way to present these scopes of work that I'm proposing to a client. You know, at corporate, they're standardized. So, you know, a new salesperson, a new franchise owner, they don't have to think through, you know, what's the best way to do this? How do I communicate this to the client? And also, it helps with that learning curve. So a lot of that standardization in the proposals is a training tool as well. But, you know, it's a fallback, makes you feel better as a new salesperson that, you're recommending the right things.
So where are you guys at today in terms of, so we're recording this in late March of 2021. So where are you guys at today in terms of number of franchisees that are open and operating, number of franchisees that you've brought on board that are, you know, still kind of in the process of getting open, kind of tell us where you're at.
Yeah, we started last year, 2020, with 7 locations. As of today, I was just sharing with you, this morning we brought on a couple locations.
Yeah.
Bringing on a couple more tomorrow. That'll put us about 23 locations or so. Those locations will be open by May 1st.
Wow.
We're in the middle of the season right now. So those owners have been under the impression they're totally on par with knowing that, hey, let's get after it and open so that we can take advantage of the season that's in front of us. We're right in peak season.
Heck yeah.
And so, yeah, it's right now we have 15 locations as of today that are open.
That's awesome, man. And I have no doubt it's going to continue to grow from there. And I think part of the reason is, I mean, you know, look, for me, in my role consulting with people and, you know, introducing them to franchise companies that could be a fit, it's important for me to understand, you know, who's behind these franchise companies, who's at the top, who's the visionary, who's going to lead this thing. So, you know, there's no doubt that you've played a huge role in the success you've had so far and will continue to do so. But, you know, I want to talk more about the actual business because you alluded to this earlier. You have 40 different services. Like when I first heard about Lime Painting, I kind of rolled my eyes a little bit and was like, oh, another painting franchise. Whoop-de-doo. Nothing against painting. It's a great business for all the reasons that we've already talked about, right? Most of your competition's pretty unsophisticated. They don't have the systems and processes. The client suffers. A good franchise is going to bring all of these things. But there's quite a few pretty large national painting franchises that have a pretty good footprint. Not to say there's not market share left, but the more I've learned about Lime, the more I've realized, wow, these guys are really different. Not just in the painting aspect, but you go far beyond where most painting companies are going to go. So kind of walk us through, you know, what is the actual business that Lime is in?
Yeah, right. You know, we're the first and only high-end paint company. So, you know, what does that mean? Well, you know, when I was in college, I was already noticing that painting wasn't enough for these high-end homes. A lot of times with the humidity, we were replacing two sides of the house with brand new cedar. We were doing siding. We got to replace the surface. We can't just smack product on it. It's not going to stick right. So I started telling clients, hey, why replace half of your house? Why don't we replace the whole thing and put hardy board and do it right? And we did plenty of that when I was in college. So I started getting a taste for it in college, but always kind of had my mind around, okay, how can we maximize the amount of value we're bringing clients, provide them expertise? They have discretionary income to reinvest in their highest valued asset that they want to buy, pay more to get more. That's what they want. That's how they buy everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, when I moved back to Denver and was really proving out the unit economics, I would paint a house and it'd be a multi-million-dollar home. And the trim and the siding, everything we painted looked great. But the metal fence was rusted and oxidizing. It was discolored. The stamped patio walkway that went to the front door and the stamped concrete driveway was, weathered and deteriorating. The stucco had cracks in it. The gutters were still leaking onto our fresh paint. The manufactured windows were chalking and discolored. And so the paint looked great, though. Everything else, not so much.
Well, everything else takes away from how nice the paint would look if the rest of the house wasn't kind of needing an uplift as well, or an upfit.
Absolutely. So, started just realizing that, hey, paint is a type of coating, and paint and coatings are formulated to protect and, aesthetically improve a surface. And each one of those surfaces I just mentioned, whether it's the stucco or the metal or the stamped concrete, they all have coatings that are designed specifically for that surface. And fundamentally, each coating works the same way. So we started talking to clients about their whole property and educating them around what I just said. Paint is a coating. And really, you have all these surfaces that make up your home, and there's deterioration going on around your property beyond just the paint. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, our demographic has discretionary income to update their highest valued assets. So now, we've educated them around their whole property. And so when they compare a competitive quote, they have the paint quote and then our paint quote, apples to apples. But then we have seven other services that are coatings and surface restoration related. And, now they're looking at it as quote unquote doing the job right.
Yeah.
And then when they go back to their home, they drive up that stamped concrete driveway. They look at the fence that's rusted and oxidizing. They now see the gutters that are leaking onto the trim, the manufactured windows that are chalk. And they've been educated. They see and they understand how, that is actually, your asset is deteriorating. So how do you maintain that highly valued asset? And hopefully, we've done a good job of educating them on the right ways that have been thoroughly vetted for restoring all those surfaces the right way.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it makes all the sense in the world. Like, I can imagine if someone came and went through this process with me at my house and I said, no, I think I'm just going to go with the painting. That's all I need right now. Like, it would drive me nuts to the point where I call you back and be like, nope, come out and do everything. Because I'd be noticing everything that you pointed out to me and educated me on. And it's like, it was there before, but now that someone's kind of pointed it out to me, it really, pops out. So I think it's brilliant, but I think it's a very needed service, especially for these higher end homeowners. Like you said, they've got the discretionary income, and for most people, their home is their highest valued asset or close to it. So why not invest money into it to not only make it look nice, but make it last longer and not deteriorate. So as I started understanding more of how you guys actually go about doing what you do and all of the different services that you provide for a homeowner, that really kind of opened my eyes. Hey, these guys are not just another painting company, and I think you're really, really onto something. So, what are some of the other things that maybe makes Lime a little bit different from not even just other painting companies, but maybe other service franchise opportunities?
Just wrapping up that last thought, we just hit on the outside. There's also the inside, the epoxy floors, the cabinet coatings, the faux, all the lacquer stain work.
So you're going inside the house too.
We want to know our surface too. We want to be able to do the drywall, much like we do on the outside. We know that surface restoration. So a lot of value to bring to clients. As I've been in franchising, I've heard more and more about owner operator or semi absentee owner. 10 years ago, it was about how do I structure a business that, myself and franchise partners can work on and not in.
Right.
And down the rabbit hole 10 years later, as I've spoken to more individuals in franchising, I've learned that that's called semi absentee ownership.
Yeah.
Back in college, when I was working on my business degree, it was just business principles like, process systems, and having a team and being able to, I call it the Superman model. I feel like a lot of our competitors are, the Superman model where you're wearing all
doing it all
things, you're doing everything.
Yeah.
Which is great. So half of our owners right now are owner operator. The other half are semi absentee. So we're looking for team builders. Even our owner operators that have come in, really they've come in owner operator from an initial investment standpoint. That's what they could invest to get into Lime to build their empire. And so they're in the process of working themselves out of their business and
sure.
actually starting to hire that team. That's been cool to see those first year owner operators now building their teams and just seeing the impact on their ability to scale more efficiently than just, you know, them as an owner operator. I've learned that this is unique for home service, having a quote unquote semi absentee business model. But it's simple. You know, if we have, like, for example, our three unit owners, whether it's, you know, a place like Dallas or Columbus, you know, those guys, they're hiring multiple salespeople right out of the gate as a semi absentee owner. So we want, you know, the business model is simple from an org chart standpoint. We mm-hmm. just want one salesperson per territory. So those three locations would have three salespeople.
Got it.
You know, everything else is subcontractor, which, you know, really simplifies the model.
Well, it does. And I mean, I can see how that guidance and saying, all right, you've got three units or three territories, you need three salespeople to start. You know, I mean, we've got two different home service franchise businesses, multiple units with each of them. And yeah, there's never really been that kind of streamlined, you know, org chart or recommendation saying, hey, based on the number of territories you have, this is what your team needs to look like. We figured it out, but you know, we've also, especially early on, you know, we've found ourselves scrambling because we grew pretty quick and then we didn't have the staff in place to keep up with that. And so then we're scrambling to try to, so if you know and are getting good advice from the franchisor to say, hey, this is how much market you have to go out and develop, this is the team and the structure that you need to do that. It's invaluable, especially as a new franchisee, knowing coming into it, you know, what they're going to need to put in place as far as their team goes.
Yeah. And, you know, and I was able to work that out in our corporate locations, having a couple corporate locations, they were overstaffed. I had four salespeople. And, you know, when I went down to two salespeople, we had a little bit less in top line the following year, way more in bottom line. So
yeah,
we'll work through, okay, what is the most efficient, you know, org chart when you're launching? So yeah, one salesperson per territory.
Yeah, I'll take that trade off any day. I'll sacrifice a little bit of the top line for a stronger bottom line.
Wes here. You may have noticed there's a franchising theme to this podcast. And that's because franchising has had a massive impact on my life, and it's the very reason I'm walking my own path to freedom. In fact, one of my companies is a franchise consulting company where I work with people to help them understand franchising and determine if it might be a good fit for them. And if it is something they want to explore, then I help them navigate the entire investigative process and ultimately find a franchise business that's a great match for them. You know, the fact of the matter is there are thousands and thousands of franchise businesses out there today. And like anything, there are good ones and there are bad ones. Even out of the many, many great franchise companies, not every one of them would necessarily be a good fit for you. You know, buying a franchise is a huge decision and you don't want to wing it. I've helped many people buy franchise businesses over the years, and my wife and I have bought and owned franchises today. And we plan to keep investing in franchise businesses. I love helping people understand this process and help them find a business that's going to be a great fit for them and help them accomplish their goals and ultimately create that freedom in their life that we're all looking for. The best part of all of this is that my services are free to the people I work with. And while I do love to contribute to charities and other great causes, I'm not a nonprofit. I'm compensated by the franchise companies I work with when I introduce them to someone that ends up becoming one of their franchisees. It's very similar to real estate, but with franchises. I have the privilege of working with hundreds and hundreds of the best franchise companies out there across practically every industry. So I can be absolutely confident that when I recommend someone to look at a franchise company, I'm introducing them to a very credible and proven company with a solid business model and great support. So if you think you might be interested in learning more about franchising and seeing if it might be right for you, I'd love to speak with you. Get in touch with me by email at wes@path2freedom.com, path2frdm.com. And also check out my website at path2freedom.com, spelled the same way, where I've got a ton of resources, both franchise and non-franchise related, that will help you start down your own path to freedom.
And of course, subscribe to and follow the podcast for more great advice about business ownership. And if you know anyone else that might be interested in speaking with me, please share this podcast with them. Thanks for listening to my shameless plug. Now let's drop back into the episode. What does the kind of infrastructure look like for someone to get a line painting franchise up and running? Do you need a physical location? What type of equipment do you need to have in order to launch this thing?
No brick and mortar. Really, your fixed asset is your vehicle, which is an awesome promotional piece. Being a lime-colored business, trust me, it stands out.
No doubt.
And in our corporate locations, we've heard clients tell us, "Man, I see your whole fleet driving all around town." It's like there's one vehicle.
Yeah, but you don't tell them, right? You're like, yep, we're everywhere. That's our fleet.
Yeah, we're everywhere.
It may be a fleet of one, but that's our fleet.
I can't tell you how many clients have told us that. You know, it's a multi-million-dollar location, and it's one vehicle.
Yeah.
But that's the great thing about our models. Our niche, we have a higher average ticket. So, we're doing, average ticket is three times the industry average. So you're doing way less jobs.
Right. To get the same volume, if not more than, some of the other painting companies, which is another thing that really, caught my eye once I kind of understood that. And, I think that's an important, thing to hit on. We don't have to talk any specific numbers, but, I think a lot of people that, may look at a business like line painting or anything in home service and say, well, not the type of business I picture myself being in. Right. I'm not blue collar or whatever the terminology is. And, can that business really get big enough to do what I want to do anyways? I think a lot of people underestimate how big some of these home service businesses can get. And then when you compare it to a lot of the other franchise opportunities out there, as you said, there's no brick and mortar. Like your biggest equipment asset is a truck. This is a lot less expensive to get a franchise like this up and running and to start actually producing some revenue and some cash flow for you than a restaurant or, anything that's going to require, a physical location or a retail location. But I just think a lot of people underestimate, you can really scale these into very large businesses with very low overhead in the process. They're great opportunities.
Yeah. I think one thing we benefit from is, if you ask, Sherwin-Williams, Benjamin Moore, any supplier, or professional painters in the space, hey, what's the most profitable sector in painting? They would tell you high-end residential repaints. We've benefited from that being our niche because we can then go out and recruit the best talent in the market from a subcontractor standpoint because our clients are willing to pay us more to get more.
Now
we have a minimal subcontractor model where you talk about efficiencies of being able to scale. When you have retention and loyalty from subs because you're providing them with, a desirable niche in the market, that just leads to, you talk about being able to scale a home service company efficiently, and we've definitely benefited from that for sure. The other thing I would hit on is, like the technology. You asked about, okay, what's the infrastructure, the startup? What does that look like to support the business? Mm-hmm. As a semi, quote unquote, semi-absentee owner, I look at it as, hey, as someone that's going to work on their business, not in it, you're relying on a team and you're trying to drive performance. You're a team builder, a coach, you're scaling your empire. You have to be able to zero in on the key metrics. So, our tech stack is important for our owners being able to understand, what are the leading and lagging indicators that really drive the business? What are those KPIs on the sales side and then the production side so that, as I'm trying to scale this business, drive revenue, mm-hmm. and then on the back end, ensure quality control and understand my capacity, my resources, technology is a big component of that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people underestimate how important technology is and a service business because, your end product is not technology, but in this day and age, if you're not leveraging technology in your business, you're missing out on great opportunities, right? So, it's always something I encourage people to look at and make sure they really understand when they're exploring franchises, regardless of what the business is, get to understand what type of technology they have in place. Sometimes it's proprietary, sometimes it's not. But you know, in my mind, that's something that a good franchisor should absolutely be, you know, helping their franchisees leverage and really just putting in place for the franchisees, because without it, you know, it's hard to have the systems and processes that will lead to scalability.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about, you know, the backgrounds of some of the franchise partners that you've brought on board so far. I mean, are people coming into this with, you know, previous experience in painting or as a contractor, or are you getting people from all walks of life? I mean, what type of person? You mentioned you're looking for team builders, but is there kind of a specific, I don't know, profile that you're looking for in your franchisees?
You know, the thing I love about painting is that it's simple. It's a simple business. And sure, we have a sophisticated process, but it's a simple business. It can be learned. I can't tell you someone that I know of in the system, sales, GM, franchise owner, that's come into line with painting or even construction experience. But the backgrounds, from owner operator, we've had, one individual that comes to mind, he was working service for an RV dealership and walked in as an owner operator. And, you know, his wife actually, the way they funded business was through her 401k. So yeah, they were all in on the business, and he didn't have any sales background. But the process at Lime, one of our biggest differentiators, our sales process, that education process around working with an affluent demographic. Mm-hmm. He came in, he learned our process, and really it's becoming an expert, a trusted advisor. And, anybody can do that. If you learn, if there's a finite amount of solutions for each service we offer,
yep,
that leads to expertise.
Yeah.
And when you're just conveying that, speaking facts, you don't have to quote unquote be a sales guy.
It's a consultative approach to sales.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all the way from that spectrum to, the opposite of, we have a couple of directors of sales have had very successful sales careers. They're still in those director roles. We have an MIT grad, a serial entrepreneur, and, a CFO, in the semi absentee, hat, if you will.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a little bit all over the board, in terms of just backgrounds and experience.
Yeah. It's so cool. And I think that's an important, takeaway for anyone listening, is that, with a great franchise model, like what you've built here with Lime, you don't need previous industry experience. I've seen a lot of people miss out on what could be great franchise opportunities for them because they look at, the industry that the business is in, or the product or the service that they provide, and they say, I don't know anything about that. So why in the world would I think about getting into that business? Well, you need to understand, what's your role as the owner going to be? My guess is for your semi-absentee owners, they're not out painting houses. They're not out, providing the action. You got subcontractors that handle all of that. They're probably not even out, running sales estimates. Maybe they want to do some of that for the first couple months just to get the experience and to kind of, know what that's like, but it's not their role, right? So if their role is more focused on bringing in good people to go out and then handle the various aspects of the business, creating a culture, using the technology and the things that you guys have put in place so that they can monitor these leading and lagging indicators, the KPIs, all of these things. Well, guess what? There's a lot of people from corporate America that probably have exactly the skill set to do that, even though they don't know the first thing about painting or coatings when they get into it. So I was really kind of hoping that I was kind of going out on a limb, but I figured this was the case, that you'd have franchisees with all different types of backgrounds, because I wanted to kind of, drive that point home. You don't need to be a painter. You don't need to even probably enjoy painting, I would venture to say, to get into this business. Like, I hate to paint. It is like the least favorite chore that my wife could ask me to do, is to paint a room. But more I've learned about Lime, I would get into this business.
It's funny that you say that, because I used to think, okay, I'm going to paint this room, I'm going to paint that room. And oh my gosh, as soon as you pick up a paintbrush, you realize how much skill goes into it, and you can make a mess real fast.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it's the prep work. I hate all the taping and just getting the paint out. And then the cleanup is even worse than that. The cleanup is probably what makes me really dread, you know, any painting that I have to do. But no, man, I love what you've built here, and I'm very excited to, you know, watch you guys continue to grow. You know, I want to get, you know, some of your advice. I mean, I know that, you know, you're pretty involved in, you know, talking to prospective franchisees that are coming through the due diligence process. And so I would imagine you see this a lot, and I would imagine you've experienced some of this yourself throughout your own entrepreneurial journey. You know, most people, when it comes time to, you know, really make the commitment to go all in and, you know, become a business owner, whether it's a franchise or not, there's a lot of what I call FUD, right? Fear, uncertainty, and doubt that starts playing games in our minds. So, you know, what advice would you have? Maybe what advice do you give to, you know, a prospective Lime franchisee that's struggling with some of this in terms of pushing through the fear and, you know, taking action, even though it scares the ever living crap out of them?
You know, I think we deal with, you call it FUD, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think we deal with FUD every day.
No doubt.
We're considering buying a franchise or not. We're dealing with FUD.
Yeah.
When I think about, you know, my days growing a sales portfolio, I was constantly fearful of, like, where's the next sale? Oh my gosh, I ran out of opportunities in the market. It's like, there's a huge territory there. You did not run out of the next opportunity.
Yeah.
And so we talk about this a lot at Lime. You know, we call it the monster. You know, you always have that monster in your head creating doubt.
I like
and,
it.
And so we define that monster. We call it the monster, and we know when it's creeping in. And the reality is, that's the game we all play in life. That monster is there, whether you're considering buying a franchise or not, or you're growing a sales portfolio, or you're working on an engineering project, or you're doing accounting. No matter where you're at, you're dealing with FUD.
Yeah.
And so if you know that you've been being inspired to start a business, and you've probably been thinking about it in phases on and off for a while,
yep,
you're going to deal with FUD with or without that business. You might as well deal with FUD while you're having fun and creating an empire and changing your life through, you know, this legacy that you're creating in a business.
Yeah, I agree. It's a good way to look at it. It's always going to be there. I mean, hell, you could have FUD getting into the car to drive to the store, right? Because you can, there's a what if for everything, right? Well, what if I get in a car accident on my way to the grocery store? And then, so what are you going to do? Just never leave your house? Yeah, it's all around us. I mean, life is uncertain. Nobody's guaranteed tomorrow. So, and I think the difference is, you know, live with, and you made a good point, right? If you're inspired to go start a business, right? We're not talking to people that have zero aspiration to go start a business. There's nothing wrong if that's not your goal, but I've just seen it hold so many people back from doing what they feel driven to do, you know, get into business for themselves and build something for themselves. You know, that's why I always ask, you know, other entrepreneurs about this topic here on the podcast, because it's something that messes with everyone, you know, that's going through this process or a similar process. But you make an important point. You're going to have it either way, whether you start that business or not. The difference is, if you don't start the business, you're going to have the FUD, but you're also going to have regret, right? You're always going to carry that regret with you of what if I would have bet on myself? What if I would have taken that leap? And, you know, for me, I think that was kind of the biggest mindset shift that I made, you know, to say we're going all in, we're betting on ourselves, was I just couldn't stand the thought of, you know, myself 20, 30 years from now, wondering, you know, what would my life be like if I would have tried some of those things I wanted to try when I was younger.
That's powerful.
Well, any other advice for the aspiring entrepreneur out there? Anything that you wish you would have known, you know, back in your college days at Michigan State that you know now?
I think, you know, sometimes dealing with FUD, you can wonder, you know, should I have done this? Should I have done that differently? How could I do this? And there's a lot of analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Even going into considering, like the topic we were just talking about, considering, you know, creating an empire through business ownership, you're going to deal with a lot of different analysis. And so you might as well just do it. So in my career, I've benefited from just doing it. And mm-hmm. I think younger, I was naive and just did it. And I look back and I think about, hey, pulling out a $500 credit card and, not even having a sheet on my mattress my freshman year and packing it back like shoulder high with all my belongings in it. If I were to do that now, I would analyze the heck out of that. Thankfully, I was just so naive. I was like, hey, I'm going to walk onto the wrestling team. I'm going to wrestle. I'm just going to do it. And I didn't really think about it. I think there's a lot of gifts in just doing it. As we get older, we go through more experiences. It can lead to analyzing more.
Yeah.
But, I've benefited the most in my career by just doing.
Paralysis by analysis. It's a real thing. You know, you overthink it to the point where you just freeze and you can't move forward. And I think of it as dropping in. You know, I talk about that on the podcast, you know, and you say, just do it. I say, drop in. Cause in my mind, it's like you get to the edge and then you've got to make that decision, drop in. And, you know, I know you're not talking about, just like I'm not talking about, you know, taking crazy uncalculated risk here. It's like, once you've done, you know, whatever research and diligence you need to do, that you still come to that edge. And at some point you've got to make that commitment. There's always going to be a bit of a leap of faith where you're betting on yourself. Just do it. Just drop in. Like, that's, you gotta be able to pull that trigger. And usually once you do, everything gets a lot easier and a lot less scary. Cause once you're in it and you've got things to actually work on, you're committed at that point. And now you're doing, now you're building. Whereas before, and when it's just still kind of theoretical, that's when it's scariest for most people. Once they commit, once they drop in, they're off to the races, and usually they're going to have a lot of fun in the process. There's going to be tough days, but you know, for most people, there's a lot more enjoyable days than there are bad days as an entrepreneur.
Yeah. And those tough days exist regardless whether you enter.
True. No doubt. No doubt. Valid point. Hey, one thing I wanted to have you talk to a little bit was, I know you've been very intentional with the culture that, you know, you're creating here in Lime, and you actually have some core values that you and your franchise partners and all of your team kind of operate by. Do you mind sharing those core values with us?
Absolutely. Yeah. Lime stands for love, integrity, mission, and excellence. We also have a catchphrase, get limed.
I love it.
Get limed even is an extension of value. So, it's gratitude, enthusiasm, tenacity, love, integrity, mission, excellence, and discipline. You talk about having a team building platform, like a business model at Lime, as it's referred to in franchising as semi-absentee, that team building at its core is about culture.
Definitely. And,
there's no better way to be inspired by believing in what you're doing and being fulfilled in what you're doing, as opposed to, showing up and doing what you need to do to get a paycheck. We spend so much of our life at work. You might as well do it, being inspired, being fulfilled, and doing things that you hopefully have never done before. I think that a culture really creates an environment where you can have, a culture of high performance. And I think high performers are looking for fulfillment and, identifying with something beyond themselves and a common goal. It's been neat to see that come to life and others own our core values and do all those things I just mentioned, thrive within that environment for them to perform at a high level.
Yeah, I love it, man. And to your point, culture is so important, especially, when you're building a team, because if you have people on that team that are not, bought into the culture that you've created, then, it just has the potential to turn toxic, so,
I think it's pretty powerful stuff, and love the core values that, you know, you guys live by. And I love the catchphrase, get limed too. it's definitely catchy. So is the lime green, you know, color that you guys, you know, have into your branding. So no, really, man, it's very impressive what you've done, what you've built. And, you know, I'm excited to watch you continue to grow this thing. And, I'm a big fan. So, really appreciate you taking time to drop in here on the Path to Freedom podcast with me. Where can people go to connect with you? Where can they go to learn more about lime painting if they're interested in, you know, maybe having lime painting do some work on their house? And where can people go to learn more about the franchise opportunity?
Yeah, obviously our website is limepainting.com. You can learn about all the different service offerings. If you're interested in getting limed yourself as a customer or helping others get limed as a franchise owner, you go right to our website. Also on any social media platform, you can search the hashtag get limed.
Okay.
It's actually pretty neat on that point. You know, we'll wrap up a project and we'll do a customer testimonial. And at the end, it's our ceremonial thing to do, you know, have the client say, get limed. And so we have a compilation of like 100 different clients.
So cool.
Yeah.
For a second, I thought you were going to say it's like the tradition to like pour lime green goo all over the client. Like, cause I think of like the Nickelodeon show or whatever, I forget what show it was, where they get, you know, doused with this lime green goo. But that probably, especially for your higher end clients, is probably not something that's that appealing to them. But no, I'll definitely make sure I'm following hashtag get limed. We'll link all this stuff in the show notes too, to make it easy for people to find. Again, thank you, man. Really appreciate it. Glad that, you know, we were able to make time to do this. Like I said, I'm a big fan. I think it's a great business, great opportunity, and clearly, you know, very good leadership at the top. So, keep doing what you're doing. Before I let you go, though, I have a quick lightning round. This is four questions that I ask everyone that comes on the podcast. We can move through these pretty quickly, but I can't let you go without answering the lightning round questions.
Let's go.
Let's rock. All right. First question is simply, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received? That could be in business or just life advice.
Winners win.
I like it. Short and sweet. Winners win. And coffee is for closers. What book are you reading right now?
John Maxwell, Leadership Bible.
Very good. I've read some John Maxwell. I haven't read that one, though. Yeah. I'll have to look into it.
Version. Yeah, it's a Leadership Bible. It's something I do every morning.
Okay, good stuff. Curious, do you have any sort of a morning routine? Anything you try to do every morning to prime yourself for a successful day?
Like to hit the gym.
From your wrestling days, huh?
You know, that gym rat mentality, it hasn't gone away.
Yeah, I hear you. Final question is simply, what is your definition of freedom and are you living it?
I think just being happy. Just being happy. Yep. And definitely. I'm married. I have four kids. And my oldest is 5, so my house is just constantly crazy, tons of joy, and couldn't be happier being a dad.
So you have definitely wrapped your mind around the mantra that chaos is beautiful. To have 4 kids under the age of 5. I've got 2. One's a 3-month-old right now, and man, 2's kicking our butt a little bit. We love it, but I just have to constantly keep telling myself chaos is beautiful. Just enjoy it, because they won't be this young forever. But yeah, man, God bless you with 4 under 5. But no, I know it's fun, and it brings a whole nother meaning to, you know, life and everything that you're doing and building your businesses and stuff. So again, really appreciate this, man. I've had a lot of fun talking with you, and look forward to staying connected, and look forward to seeing Lime continue to grow. But appreciate you being here on the Path to Freedom podcast.
Was a pleasure. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Got it. That's a wrap. Thanks for joining me today, and be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you'll know when a new episode is released. You can also check me out on my website at www.path2frdm.com. And if you want more information about franchising or just want to say hello, feel free to contact me at Wes at Path, the number 2 FRDM.com. Thanks again. Now go drop in.